Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, we start out with John Galtney and Carol Lucy. They're both president emeritus of Truckee Meadows Community College and Western Nevada College, plus Rebecca Goff, clinic manager for the Nevada Humane Society. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Located in the heart of Carson City, the Bank Saloon, a historic watering hole with a modern feel. With a variety of classic cocktails featuring Nevada spirits, space for private events, conferences, and an incredible atmosphere. The Bank Saloon offers a great location to work and play. Come visit us, located at the corner of 5th and Carson. We'll save you a drink.
What do you count on? You count on your power every day. At NV Energy, we've always powered what's important to you. But we're not looking at the past. We're focused on the future. While our standards are high, our rates will remain low. And our commitment to renewables isn't just meeting standards, but leading the way. Because you can count on more than just your power. You can count on the company who brings it to you. That's our promise. You can count on it.
When in Carson City, Nevada Newsmakers records in the conference room at the Bank Saloon. Coverage of the 2021 Nevada legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Ahern Rentals is ready for your next project. Liberty Dental Plan, making members shine one smile at a time. And
Southwest is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from the Bank Saloon conference room here in Carson City. We're joined by two of my favorite people, John Galtney, president emeritus of Truckee Meadows Community College, and Carol Lucy, president emeritus of Western Nevada College. Pleasure to have you both here. The discussion is about breaking the community colleges away from the university system so that they can get appropriate funding, which has never, according to both of you, occurred in the time that community colleges have existed. John, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And first of all, let me thank you for having us. The opportunity to explain why the issue of separation of the community colleges from the university system is very much appreciated by not only the two of us, but by at least, I think we're representing all of the retired community college presidents in the state at this particular point.
And one out of state, actually.
And one out of state, you're right. So we're not here just the two of us talking. Much of what we're going to cover during the time you've allotted is certainly supported by all of these individuals. Secondly, let me say before we get into the subject any deeper that we have nothing against the regions per se. The system is the problem at the current time. It is not the regions. Those individuals run for office, get paid nothing, go through tons of paper and donate their time. They deserve some credit for that. However, they're badly led. Let me indicate that to you. The fact of the matter is that there are three reasons why the separation should take place. The first reason is the equity of distribution of resources. You're aware of the fact that during the 2013 session, we created a new formula. The distribution had been terrible prior to that. It became unbearable after the distribution of the formula. Carol, I think, lived through that process more than I did and could tell a little bit about the study that was done supposedly to support that. By the way, it was not done, but...
Well, the study that produced the current funding formula, there are a lot of points of view about that study. My own personal experience is that it was not a valid study. A consultant from NCHEMS, which is one of those agencies that that does consulting for higher education institutions, basically turned everything over to NGE, to the staff, not the regents, the staff. And what was produced was, in my opinion only, designed to prevent another conflict between the two universities. And my experience in Nevada has been that that's always at the heart of every system problem, the conflict between the two universities. You can see it playing out right now in the new bill, SB 287 or something, on the whole land grant issue. That's fine. That's their issue. That's way above my pay grade, particularly now since I'm retired. But it has clouded the ability of the little community college system to really develop and become a quality nationally recognized community college system. The four community colleges are always the Cinderella children. They've never been properly recognized. In most states where there is local involvement in the community college, whatever the community college is for that region, people bond to that college, they become passionate about it, and that basically provides support and funding for a community's college. That doesn't happen much in Nevada, or rather it happens, but the local people have no ability to say anything about how the colleges are funded, except for maybe one assembly person, one lone assembly person who does the good fight at the legislature. Right. But, you know, our colleges are so badly underfunded. And the 2013 put paid to that, when basically the universities were funded appropriately, perhaps, given the times, perhaps not. I don't think anyone was funded appropriately after the 2008 crisis. But the colleges were just destroyed by that funding formula. And it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And the two smallest colleges, Great Basin and Western, I don't know how they cope. I don't know how those presidents have managed to keep their institutions afloat, frankly.
All right, let's take a quick break and let's come back and see what some of the solutions potentially could be.
Okay.
And we'll be right back.
I can't do it. Stupid, like my mom.
We can't do anything at Mommy's because you won't pay child support.
Dad said you cheated, and he's not even sure he's my dad.
Mommy said you left both of us, so she isn't going to let me see you.
I look just like my father.
I'm divorce attorney Marilyn York, and I may represent men, but hate has no gender, only casualties. Please, stop sacrificing your children in your war against your ex.
Because of UMC, I'm putting my free time to good use.
Because of UMC, she keeps me on my toes.
Because of UMC and this guy, I'm here.
UMC, the highest level of care in Nevada.
Serving Our Kids Foundation's mission is to serve homeless, at-risk, and food-insecure children in grades K through 8 throughout Southern Nevada. During the pandemic, Serving Our Kids has seen a 42% increase in the number of children served, providing more than 4,500 meals to kids in over 100 schools weekly. Serving Our Kids is powered by community support and volunteers. To learn how you can help, visit servingourkids.org.
As you know, Reno is booming. Toll's development company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Toll's development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Carol Lucy and John Galtney, both president emeritus of respectively Truckee Meadows Community College and Western Nevada College. So at this point, the chancellor is against this plan,
yes,
of separating the funding. The Board of Regents appears to be against the plan. I don't see any support coming from former Governor Sandoval, who's now president of UNR. So what would you like to see done and by whom in this
session?
Well,
first of all, let me mention that Bethany Barnes looked into the subject that Carol was talking about. Now, let me very quickly say that separation of the community colleges is the only way the state's economic system is going to get the services that it needs. Clearly, the problem as we see it today is twofold. The first part of the problem is that there is not the trained labor force to meet the needs that have been put forth. EDON in the north and in the south, the equivalent of EDON, have both expressed serious problems about the economics of untrained labor supply.
And can I just quickly throw in that if diversification is the goal, then you need the community colleges to
absolutely
be a major part of this.
I heard the president of UNR 2 days ago say what his priorities were. None of those priorities was to train the labor force that goes to those centers. It was to keep tier one for the university and so on. Those are very nice things. I'm not opposed to those. I, however, say that is not what the state's priority should be. And the state's priority will never be what it needs to be as long as the community colleges are locked under the university system. That, now let me give you one quick example of why this is terribly tragic at the current time. In Reno and surrounding area, people are being literally turned out of their homes because they can't pay the rent any longer. Diversification is important, but I see all kinds of license plates in the area that have nothing to do with Nevada. Those people moved here to take those jobs. I'm not opposed to that, but the first people that ought to get that are the Nevadans who are paying the taxes and have for years, and the legislature is not meeting that need. Those people need to be trained, put into those jobs, get those new salaries, and so on. And if you're out there, you ought to vote for those legislators who are putting forth the idea that Nevadans ought to get those jobs first. And the only way they're going to get them is to be trained by the community college.
Carol, who are you directing this message to?
Well, I don't believe that obviously the legislature has to solve the problem. And the governor has indicated a willingness to solve the problem.
And he's a former regent.
And yeah, he is a former regent, and he knows this problem intimately. I don't believe either party should take this issue on. I think it's a bipartisan issue. The colleges are not about politics. They are about the development of a healthy society in Nevada. And John mentioned the need to train our young people for the jobs that are there now, but also we have a large immigrant population coming in, and we need to make sure those people go to college. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a bipartisan issue. I think everybody's got a piece of the action. They all ought to get together and do the right thing by their community college system.
A one-word answer. John, are you optimistic?
I think so.
Carol?
I don't know about this session, maybe the next one.
And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you both very much. I really appreciate it. And we'll be right back.
Tamarack Casino is giving away two Mercedes-Benz during the $125,000 Benz or Cash Giveaways. Plus, players get 5x points on video reels every Friday. Win two Mercedes-Benz now through May at Tamarack Casino.
The Do It Right guys at Nevada Heating have one mission. Your furnace breaks down today, we fix it today. Why freeze for days while your furnace is down when Nevada Heating can get the job done today and you can get warm again? For nearly 50 years, locally owned Nevada Heating has been getting the job done right. Call today at 323 323-5585 and we'll fix it today. That's 323-5585 or online at NevadaHeating.com.
Tamarack Casino is giving away two Mercedes-Benz during the $125,000 Benz or Cash Giveaways. Plus, players get 5x points on video reels every Friday. Win two Mercedes-Benz now through May at Tamarack Casino.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're delighted to welcome to the program for the first time, even though we've been trying to drag her on here forever, Rebecca Goff is here. She's the clinic manager for the Nevada Humane Society. Absolute pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And in case people are wondering, your husband is Alex Goff, and I'm glad we finally have the better half of the team on the program.
Well, thank you.
So the Nevada Humane Society, first of all, let me ask you a couple of questions about what's been going on with COVID.
Yes.
I know that it's been difficult for people who have wanted to adopt animals because you've not been able to let people come into the shelters, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we had to completely change how we operate. Obviously, these animals still need our care, so there's no way we could have just shut down. Our staff has been working continuously through the pandemic, and in order to be able to provide these services still for the public, we had to adapt. So we went to an adoptions platform that was appointment-based, so people could book a time, pick an animal online, and come visit that animal and hopefully adopt that animal. And for our public services, like we did a pet food drive that was drive-through during the heart of the lockdown, and we reopened our vaccine clinics as a drive-through model as well. And that has actually been so popular and so well received, we're going to keep the drive-through model moving forward.
Now that the governor has lifted restrictions, have there already been conversations about what you can open up further under the new guidelines?
Yes, we have been having those conversations. We were obviously awaiting the governor's instructions to kind of figure out what our next steps would be. So that's a conversation we are having next. And so I would definitely keep our eyes peeled for where we go next.
All right. So you're in Carson City, and obviously there are issues. You've got three bills that you have concerns about. Let's start with AB 200, which revises provisions governing veterinary medicine. What's the bones of this bill?
So it's really, I would call it a little weedsy. It's really very specifically geared towards veterinary medicine. So while it doesn't benefit or really affect the shelter as a whole, we do have a veterinary component to the shelter, and we feel that this bill will be beneficial for veterinary medicine and animals across the state.
Okay, and what exactly does it do?
So it goes over quite a few things. One of the things it talks about is telemedicine. We saw with COVID, just like everything else, veterinary medicine had to adapt.
I hadn't even thought about that. Telemedicine for animals.
Yes. So it's kind of a really complicated thing because with people, it's not difficult. You call your doctor, you can explain your symptoms, you can say what's going on. Obviously, animals can't do that. So we really need a veterinary client-patient relationship to be established first so that our animals, our doctors have already had a chance to see that animal, lay hands on the animal. That's how veterinarians really do most of their work, is they're not, you know, we wish we could talk to animals, but veterinarians don't
talk
have
to
that
Eddie
ability.
Murphy.
Yeah, so they have to use their eyes, their ears, their smell, hands, touch, like there's all the other senses really go into being a veterinarian. And so some of this bill kind of focuses on that and how we can still have telemedicine as a tool available for us, but make sure that we're doing it in a way that's safe for the animals and going to protect our veterinarians as well.
I would think that in rural Nevada especially, that telemedicine would be a huge thing, and also for pet owners who are senior citizens and have trouble getting around, if they have the ability to use telemedicine, that would be terrific for them.
Absolutely. You know, it's something that I think we can't avoid. It's a tool that's going to be super helpful for people in less accessible areas like our rural communities, for our senior citizens, even on the shelter basis. You know, we have a number of animals that we put out in our foster system, and sometimes they have emergencies that happen overnight or when a veterinarian is not physically on site in the building, and this could be a tool to help us take care of those pets more efficiently.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, I certainly know for humans, this one in particular, that telemedicine has been terrific. I mean, time-saving as well as convenient. SB 103, prohibiting certain insurers from discriminating based on the breed of a dog at a property. What's the issue there?
So we've seen over time what we call breed discrimination laws. And so they establish certain breeds that are inherently quote-unquote dangerous.
For example,
pit bulls, Rottweilers, kind of these big bully type breeds. Unfortunately, distinguishing the breed of an animal is a guess at best, unless you use genetic testing, which no shelter has the resources to do genetically test every single animal that comes through. Most veterinarians don't have those resources, and most clients aren't willing to pay that. So breeds are determined by a visual guesstimate as best that they can. And so by saying, for example, on a property a pit bull is banned, well, this dog could be a mix of 12 different breeds, and it just might happen to look like what this person thinks a pit bull looks like. So discriminating based on a breed is just inherently not correct. And there's also lots of data that shows that these animals are not more dangerous than any other specific type of dog. You know, we're so lucky to share our lives with dogs, and we've become so comfortable with them in our households that we forget that these are still animals. And any dog can bite at any time for any reason. So prohibiting a certain group of dogs from housing just because they might bite is not really a sound way to make that judgment. And this specific bill focuses on insurance specifically, so being able to get insurance policies, not necessarily some policies now prohibit certain breeds, which means if you have that breed of a dog, you might not be able to get insurance for your property, so you're not going to rent to people who have that certain type of breed dog. And this affects the shelter specifically, and animal sheltering in general, because we see these dogs get surrendered at a higher rate, and commonly the cited reason is landlord issues or housing availability. And it's really putting people at a really unfair decision. They have to make the choice of, do I keep my beloved pet, or do I have a place to house my family and my children? And unfortunately, most times the choice is, I have to surrender my pet to the shelter. And then a secondary side effect of that is these same animals are harder to adopt out because of these same reasons. We had a dog recently named Diamond, a beautiful pit bull type dog, and she was at our shelter for weeks, which right now with our lower population is not a very common thing. And we had so many people who were so interested in her, and the common thing we kept hearing is, she seems like a wonderful dog. I wish I could have that type of dog in my housing, or if my landlord would let me have them, or I can't have dogs where I live, or I can't have that type of dog where I live, was the comments that we would see time and time again. And thankfully, you know, she finally found a home, and we're super happy for her, but she's just a small example of a bigger problem.
Okay, so what kind of pushback are you getting from the insurance companies, from the homeowners and the renters?
You know what, I testified on the bill, and I only heard two people opposing it, and the biggest concerns are still, you know, what is a dangerous dog? You know, they feel that, and I can't speak exactly for them not being them, but I think the general pushback is that there's a false belief that these specific types of dogs are dangerous when they are not. And our state actually has specific guidelines to deem a dog dangerous, and this bill also includes information about that. So if a dog is deemed dangerous by the state or the county, like, that's a different situation. Those are a different kind of thing, rather than just saying all of these types of dogs could be dangerous in the future.
Right. A third bill that you're involved in is AB 209, which would effectively ban declawing in the state with certain medical exceptions. Explain for those of us that don't know exactly what that means, what that is, and why it's at the legislature.
So this bill is one that's particularly, I think, a really important issue, and specifically for myself. I've worked in veterinary medicine for over a decade, and in the private practice setting before I moved into the shelter world, and I saw the effects of this firsthand, both in private practice and now in the shelter world. For those who don't know, people think declawing is one thing, and it's actually not. The declawing of a cat is the surgical amputation of the first toe bone of all of their toes on their front feet. So in human equivalence, that would be like if you cut off this first knuckle of every single finger on your hand. It is incredibly painful. It is incredibly traumatic to the cat. Scratching is a normal and natural behavior of cats, whether it's, you know, on little scratching posts or it's a line of defense for them. So people historically have declawed their cats for maybe reasons of convenience. They don't want them ruining their furniture, or they don't want them scratching their children or themselves. And unfortunately, when you remove that line of defense, they then escalate to the next thing, which is biting. And cat bites are far more dangerous to humans than a cat scratch would be. I have seen cat bites get infected and go south very quickly. Working in veterinary medicine, and it's something that we take very seriously. And so this bill would, you know, obviously there's certain exceptions to it, and I know that it was amended a little bit, but it certainly would effectively, like, bring this conversation to people's minds and help veterinarians have a tool to give them other options, so that instead of jumping straight to this pretty drastic measure, there's other things you could try first. And, you know, unfortunately, a side effect like the other bill of this that we see in sheltering is that these cats end up having secondary behavioral problems, specifically biting.
Right.
If you're not going to tolerate your cat scratching you, you're certainly not going to tolerate a cat biting you.
Yeah.
And those animals get surrendered, and we at the shelter actually spend a lot of time trying to rehabilitate these cats because they are so traumatized from this experience. And many of them, there was a study in 2017, many of them, over 50%, have lifelong complications, including bone spurs and regrowth under the skin. So just imagine what that would be like walking around all day with that kind of pain. And it also affects how they use their litter box. And so we see them, you know, surrendered for inappropriate elimination. And that's a difficult thing for people to live with as well. So people think they're keeping animals in their homes by providing this service. And unfortunately, what usually happens is that they end up in the shelter anyway.
And that's where we have to leave it. I thank you so much for taking the time to come down. For people watching on television or the video podcast or on YouTube, they're seeing all these great animal pictures. And it was a great conversation. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. You're very welcome. And we'll be right back.
Brian Culpa Photography was born in the rolling hills of Massachusetts, and now he can help you experience the stunning beauty of Nevada in a whole new way through the power of flight. Flying has always been a passion for Brian, and at Brian Culpa Photography, he can make your imagination soar. Brian has the creative mind and tools to tell your unique story. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
Safety. We all think about it. You think about it when he buckles in, when you check your mirrors and put away your phone. RTC thinks about safety too. In fact, we create it. Center turn lanes mean fewer blind spots. Bike lanes keep cyclists and you safe. Roundabouts reduce injury collisions. And all these crosswalks are designed to keep families like yours safe. Safety is your priority and it's ours too. Every day, in everything we do.
ProGroup Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. ProGroup Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. ProGroup Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
We'll see you on the next broadcast, coming to you from the Bank Saloon in Carson City. See you then.